Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
Hello, everybody. I'm James Lacey, CEO of Protect. I'm here with my colleague at RWS, Head of Innovation, Tony Brennan. We're going to be talking to you about the findings from our recent Ahead of the Game survey. Now, myself and Tony have been in the IP industry more than 40 years collectively. I'll leave you to decipher in the audience who is the youngest of the two. Welcome to the podcast, Tony.
Thank you very much. Should we give hints?
Best not.
No, leave it to the audience.
Indeed. So, as I mentioned, we've been in the IP industry for quite some time, most of our professional careers, actually. Reading through the Ahead of the Game survey that we recently commissioned at RWS, was there anything there that surprised you? The IP industry has traditionally been viewed as quite conservative. Was there anything that really surprised you in that report?
Well, not really, I think. In the sense that we're pretty close to our customers. However, the general perception of the industry is that it's highly conservative and slow to change. But I think that myth has been busted over the years, and certainly that was confirmed within the survey for me when it came to questions around AI. I think a better way of looking at our industry is that we are understandably risk averse. However, when a new technology comes along like AI, people are willing to try it. They have their own imperatives. There are enough changes within the industry, I think, in terms of more cost pressures, more fixed pricing for law firms, to mean that anything that certainly can help them find efficiencies are going to attract those people. So I think it was interesting to see just the numbers of people who had at least the intention of trying out AI solutions. I think it was 92% of people had that intention. But even people who were actively or had already tried one or more AI solutions was as high as 55%, which is to say, I think for many people, that is quite a surprise. But I think if you understand the dynamics happening in the industry, I think that's in line with other industries. And I think that shows a progressive kind of approach to new technology that we see when we talk to people all the time.
Absolutely. From surveying the respondents, it's quite clear, actually, that, as you mentioned, Tony, a lot of respondents had adopted AI themselves. The average of solutions that were adopted were over three solutions. So there was, a high degree of respondents adopting AI-based solutions. I think also something that was quite interesting to see was that, when we asked respondents what percentage of your workflow will be impacted by AI, respondents mentioned that 20 to 30% of the workflow will be completely automated by AI. Between 40 to 60% indicated that AI would at least enhance their workflows, and only 20 to 30% of the workload would still be done by humans. So that's something that's actually resonated, since our time at RWS, since we've looked at, how we deliver our translation solutions to our customers. We know that our customers are asking for AI to get the same level of quality, but to improve efficiency. So that certainly resonates with what we've been doing at RWS.
Yeah, I think so. But also, I think it tells you something about people's approaches to AI and where they start on that journey of adoption, right? So I know that at AWS, when we started our strategic response to AI, you know, what are we going to do? And certainly in terms of our product strategy, we did what I think you need to do. You know, you examine your use cases, but we looked at it through three different lenses, right? So the first one was automate, okay? You know, what can we do with our internal processes, our repetitive and lower value tasks? Can we automate those to make them more efficient and get more consistency in the output? And I think lots of law firms and lots of corporate IP departments are thinking in the same way. But then you start to think about the other lenses that you need to look at when you're thinking about AI. Okay, so then you start to think about how you might use AI to assist you in what you're doing. Okay. And for instance, in our case, we started with chatbots, like many people do, and published those on our IP platform. But you find that that's your initial response to it because it mirrors the way that you might be using ChatGPT in your private life, or you might be using Claude in other areas. But it's the final one, I think, that's interesting to me, is when you then start to look at it through that enhance lens. Okay, how do we think about AI transforming the way that we work and think about AI becoming something more than, or producing something more than we're currently able to do? Now, that one's the harder one, let's face it, because I'm reminded, I mean, we talked about the amount of time we've been in the IP industry and the amount of time we've been in our careers, but I remember the 90s, right, when the internet came into our homes and it first came into the workplace.
Oh, the 90s, that seems like a long time ago. To give the audience more clues.
Quite right. But you could not have imagined what the internet would have become, right? How it would have changed our lives completely, culturally, the way that we work, the way that we interact with other people. Just couldn't have seen it. Couldn't have seen the way that we're generating a podcast. Even the concept of podcast just wasn't thought of. And even with visionaries at the time, right? So I think the same thing applies to AI. Right. When it comes to that enhanced lens, because I think where we are now, there are things that we can do to start to transform the way that we work. But until we get to that next 2.0 and 3.0, who knows what the world is going to be like in 5 years' time with AI completely embedded in what we do. And I think that's the lesson. So I don't think it's a surprise when you see people, first of all, focusing on the automation side and on the assist side, because those are they're much more comfortable with that, if you see what I mean. What do you think?
No, I agree. And like, just using our own journey at RWS, we very much view, you know, AI as assisting and automating inefficient parts of our workflow. So if you look at the transformation journey we've been on at RWS, Tony, we've used tools such as value stream mapping, to really understand the value that we drive to customers, and where we see inefficiencies in the process, we've used AI just to take the efficiency out of the process. That really allows us to focus on driving value to our customers. I think if you look at our concept of genuine intelligence at RWS, this really sort of brings together, for me, how AI can enhance not only the process for our own internal team members, but how we can really drive you know, better value, essentially, for our customers. So yeah. This sort of concept of genuine intelligence is really born out of, like, if you look in the IP translation space, for years we've relied on our human expertise. And we'll continue to do so. But it's about bringing capability of machine translations into the process and applying it to the right types of use cases. We know that even the EPO now, they are accepting machine translations. So the mantra to our own customers is that...
It's only for unitary patent, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like the mantra for our customers is that we believe that there are real use cases for machine translation only, but then there are other use cases where you absolutely need the human in the loop. So I think there's much more flexibility within the IP industry. We are looking at AI for specific use cases, but our customers are also telling us that there's always going to be the need for human in the loop for certain scenarios. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that raises a really good issue, because when you're talking about AI, first of all, I think it's important to understand that we're not just talking about generative AI, although that is absolutely a part of what we're doing at the moment. But I think for me, the way the human element comes into this is all around right fit. And that's what we really mean by quality these days. So if you look at Neural MT that we've, you know, been involved in for years, but certainly within the IP industry, we've been training specialist patent machine translation over the past 18 months, I guess, to get us to a point where we can now use that as part of our translation service. Right. So, okay, what does MT give you? Well, it gives you very robust, very repeatable, high quality translations. Okay. But what it's not great at is that cultural nuance or that technology nuance that you need for certain types of outputs, and certainly within the filing space. So then I guess we're then also looking at LLMs, and LLMs give you a bit more of that nuanced translation, but they are prone to hallucination, right? And let's face it, that's not a bug, okay? That's by design. That's how large language models work as prediction engines, where they assign probability to the connections between concepts and words. So if you think about it in those terms, where the human comes in, is first of all, I think, right at the front end where you're training, you need expertise and you need great data in order to train your models to be right, yeah, to be quite fit. But then also you need people in the process to be able to review the outputs of AI so that you can trust the output, right? And you can make sure that you get to the appropriate quality. Without it, then you're just relying, you're gambling in a sense on just purely the machine. So I think when we talk about genuine intelligence, for me, that's the heart of it, right? It is how machine and human can work together in order to produce the appropriate output for what we need it to do.
Yeah, that's spot on. I'm just looking at some of the statistics we've gleaned from the survey. So 79% of IP professionals say accuracy and reliability is a number one barrier to adopting Gen AI.
Yeah,
it's a significant majority of respondents, and 62% of IP professionals list security and data protection as the number two barrier to adopting generative AI. How do you say, Tony, that RWS we are mitigating those risks?
Well, I think it's an interesting world at the moment when it comes to that. Now, look, there's a lot of legislation and there's a lot of standards in place that have been in place since just the pure data days, okay? And then, of course, you've subsequently started to see the release of AI-specific legislation. But I think that, you know, in terms of international standard compliance, like 27001, for instance, you know, companies who adopt that are the ones that can be trusted, because they take that the correct approach about the safety of your data. And then it's about compliance, I think, also to a lot of the new legislation that's coming through, like the EU AI Act. China have just released a new set of regulations. Even in the US, it's interesting, because although they're taking much more of a laissez-faire approach to regulation in order to drive innovation, okay, certainly at federal level, right? Even at federal level, it is that security area that you're starting to see them develop out their guidelines. But that more general kind of ethical approach to AI, which includes human in the loop, I think you're also seeing at state level. So you're seeing both types of regulation and regulation coming through, even in the US or even in the UK, which also has adopted more of a laissez-faire approach. So I think certainly at RWS, that's at the heart of much of what we do. But then on top of that, I think it's also about good data. And I think it's about good people. I think it's about having the right data in order to train your model so that they are specific to the task that you're trying to achieve. Okay. And if you think about the data that we curate at RWS through years of service with some of the world leading customers, that's a rich source of training data. But it's then the expertise from, you know, the vast numbers of people and translators, professional translators who are trained in specific industry domains and trained in IP.
Yeah, that's key.
Additional level of comfort when it comes to relying on the outputs of some of these solutions.
Absolutely, that's key. Understanding the context of the filing application without just relying upon the outputs of MTPE. You know, that's something we've talked about at quite some length, Tony. That's absolutely key to ensure that you know, the outputs are as intended, really.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, I think that applies to certainly our approach to translation, but I think it also applies to our approach to search. And the use of AI in our search products and the use of AI in our new products that we're looking to launch. But even in some of our existing products where it's about more about the user experience, okay, having people who've worked in that industry for a long time and then empathize with people who are using our tools all the time, they understand where the pain points are. They understand where AI can help. But also whether you still rely on the human to be able to complete the task, right? And I think that's certainly the way that I would look to approach it. You know, I mean, I think we talked a lot about AI assisting versus transforming or enhancing the way that we work.
What do you think is a barrier to transforming? Because as you're calling out, Tony, a lot of the respondents did call out this need to assist rather than transform. What do you think is driving that?
Well, I think it's twofold. I think there is a trust element of around AI to an extent still, and we've talked about what that might mean. But also, don't forget these are professional people who are highly trained and highly specialized in what they do, okay? And there is an understanding that there's an art to drafting a pattern, for instance. There is an art to responding to an objection or litigating a patent infringement. So I think that naturally, when it comes to the enhancing side of this, right, until AI can demonstrate that it's able to perform at the same level as highly trained professional people, there's going to be a skepticism about adoption or even whether it's able to do some of these things. And I think, you know, LLMs in themselves are fantastic tools to do lots of things, but this is not general artificial intelligence, right? Now, look, I spend a lot of time watching a lot of very boring YouTube videos about AI and reading a lot of blogs and a lot of white papers. And I won't bore you with all of it. But there's a genuine expectation from many that LLM isn't necessarily the route down to that more generalized use of artificial intelligence, that it will provide lots of solutions, but not necessarily solve all those problems, and that it might be a completely different paradigm that we have to think about in terms of AI to do that. So in the meantime, what does that mean? Well, it means that people still, and professional people and people with expertise, still have value in that process. But it also then, you start to see, that's why I think you started to see the rise of things like AI agents or agentic AI, because, you know, we can train LLMs to do a particular task or make decisions around singular issues. And I think they're very good at that. But what they can't do is make lots of decisions. So if you think about how that paradigm of agentic AI has now started to play out, well, in which case, have lots of smaller models working together in conjunction in order to complete a task or solve the problem. And I think that's a very good way of doing it. So it depends on what level you're looking at, right, when people are talking about enhancing. You know, you can look at it on this kind of holistic level and say, will it get there? Maybe, maybe not. Or you can think, well, okay, practically, can we use AI to actually help us make decisions, actually make decisions in some cases, and address some higher value type work? And that's still to be seen, but I think that's why you're seeing that move to AI agents within the industry.
It's interesting because, again, like circling back to the survey, when we asked our respondents on, you know, we know that they've trialed, over 50% of our respondents had trialed an AI-based solution. When we asked our respondents to rank in order of satisfaction, you know, how satisfied they were with existing solutions on the marketplace, you know, IP translations became top. You know, I'd love to think that RWS has played a part in that finding.
Yeah.
Right at the bottom of the scale, though, was pattern drafting. So we know there's lots of pattern drafting solutions out on the marketplace, but overwhelmingly, there was a high degree of dissatisfaction with pattern drafting tools. Now, coming back to the point you made earlier, Tony, that perhaps this is about the data going into the solution and not quite being fit for purpose. What are your views on that?
I think that's absolutely true. I do think you've got to think about it more broadly as well. Look, like any kind of system, rubbish in means rubbish out, right? And I think you do need to think about how you manage your data and also the quality of the input. You know, so in the drafting world, that's the invention disclosure generally, although not exclusively. Look, we know that there are companies who embed their attorneys within R&D and, you know, work more holistically or collectively to develop out and draft a patent. But very, very often you've got a single piece of information that is limited. You augment that by interviewing the interviewer maybe, and then you draft the patent. I think I think for people who are using a lot of these patent drafting tools at the moment is that it works very well as a way of managing the workflow, but not necessarily in terms of actually being able to draft a patent itself. And some companies have responded. You know, you're seeing things like the solution including localized terminology or jurisdictional guidelines and things. But I think you do need to start to think about specially trained models in a particular domain, industry domain, that is comfortable with the language, the terminology of a particular industry, but also with the way or the stylistic aspects of how to draft a patent, okay, in that jurisdiction. The last thing I would say on this is I also think you've got to think about where this can be used. What this shouldn't be, and I think this fits the theme of what we've been talking about today, is a replacement for a patent attorney. Should never be that, right?
Absolutely.
Well, this is a classic example for me of something that should assist patent attorney and save them time, right? So would you expect it ever to create a perfect patent application or patent specification without the oversight, the input, the editing, the review, the additional information of a patent attorney? No. But what it can do is provide a start and potentially a sense check at the end, right, to make sure that you're getting the consistency and that it can actually speed up the process for people. So in that light, I think you'll start to see the next generation of pattern drafting tools that actually do contribute more value to that process. But it's certainly true, and that is probably one of the things that struck me more than anything about that IP survey, James, was how many people had tried it, for one, and why and how it had such a low satisfaction score as a AI tool. People clearly see the value in something if it does work, but so far the solutions are not meeting people's expectations. I mean, when you talk to people in the industry, like I do, you know, does that resonate with what people are telling you when you're talking to customers?
When I'm out in the market talking to customers, talking to them specifically about AI and existing solutions, like a lot of customers are saying that we need more from our service providers in terms of, you know, giving advice on how AI is going to impact the industry. In fact, I think from the survey, only 20% of respondents were satisfied with the sort of advice given in terms of AI impact. So it's clear that, you know, service providers, you know, such as us and our peer group, need to do more to educate our clients regarding the impact of AI and how they can really use AI to drive value. Something that did strike me, and again, I get this sort of comment quite frequently when I'm out in the field, is that I think, certainly from speaking to the customers that I've spoken to, they say the industry is really crying out for change, actually. And coming back to the point I was making regarding respondents in the general sort of market requiring that advice and guidance. What I hear in the industry is that there needs to be much more connectivity. So existing solutions on the marketplace, you know, from our sort of history in the IP industry, Tony, the market's dominated by, you know, IP management systems. And there's a lot of satisfaction with IP management systems in terms of, you know, how the docket is managed. But customers are asking me, what else is out there that really allows us more flexibility and what really allows us to connect? If I'm a corporate IP department, how can I connect more eloquently to my agent network? How can I interact in a much more sophisticated and automated way with my outside counsel? Are you hearing any similar signals, Tony, from your time in the marketplace?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very similar. And certainly, I think certainly with IP management systems themselves, you might need to rethink what it is we're trying to achieve within IP departments and within law firms, and what sorts of tools do we need going forward. Filing a patent, filing a trademark, right? Prosecuting that through the life cycle is a collaborative affair, right? Between multiple entities, very often. So if you're in an IP department, you might have outside counsel, you might have outsourced some of your drafting or some of your filing to outside counsel. File internationally, they're going to be dealing with multiple foreign associates, law firms in other countries. They're then going to be dealing with individual patent offices. You might have service providers like translation providers within that loop. And you think about it, that's a lot of jumps for this data from one entity to the next entity. And each one of those is docketing their own information in their own system.
I was going to say to Anna, have their own version of the case object.
have an old, their own version of the truth, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're seeing situations where you've got corporates asking law firms to docket that work directly into their systems, or you're seeing service providers offering all sorts of solutions. But all you're doing is you've not changed the way that we work. All that's happened is that somebody else is doing that exact same work time and time again. You know, we're in a different kind of world with data and the way that data can be used, but also we're in a world where AI can certainly normalize, fix data. You can extract data from lots of different media now in an accurate way. You can populate automatically populate data. You can hold a single version of that truth and update data, right? So in this world, you might look at what we've considered to be an IP management system previously as your own internal management solution, albeit SaaS. It doesn't have to be on-prem, but it's still the same thing. It's your dedicated record. But in a world of AI and certainly the way that data analytics has taken off over the past few years, you might want to think about a completely different way of managing information and content going forward, right? That actually matches that collaborative exercise that goes into filing, prosecuting, maintaining, monetizing your IP, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Tony. The other trend I'm seeing in the marketplace, actually, I mean, when we talk about you know, connecting IP workflows and more collaboration across the IP lifecycle, more often than not, it's assumed that we're referring to patents or trademarks. There is an emerging trend of trade secrets. Do you have any thoughts on trade secrets and the emergence of trade secrets?
Well, look, I mean, that was interesting, wasn't it? Because there was actually, I don't know if you came across it, but in there was some feedback. I think it was about 30% of attorneys.
Yeah, 32%. Yeah.
30% being asked to think about trade secrets. Look, I think for some time, trade secrets have become more important as maybe an alternative to filing defensively. Right, with patents, but certainly, you know, now they're recognized in law, and I think, you know, you can litigate around a trade secret. It certainly becomes more important, but again, I think there's another step, right? I think about this world again. I mean, you can't avoid talking about AI in some of these things, but look, we know that there's a lot of concern about people's proprietary information. If you start thinking about the value associated with the proprietary information that's generated by a company, then that puts it into context for me, right? You've got all this data, you've got all this information that is as an asset, okay? And it's an asset that needs protecting. Just as we used to just think about protecting an asset, like an invention or a concept, or a design or a brand, I think that definition of intellectual property has widened now to include any of that proprietary information that drives your business and can be exploited commercially and to extract its value, right? So you think about how that works. There's an opportunity for organizations to really get their act together around how they manage that content, okay? How they transform that content, how they protect that content. And service providers and IP attorneys are broadening their minds about how they can be a part of that and contribute to the wider protection of intellectual property, or the protection of intellectual property in its wider definition, if I put it that way. It's a really interesting area. And the same, I guess, works for copyright, okay? particularly with all the concerns about the reuse of that proprietary information as training data in the production of large language models, right? And people worried that their output is being plagiarized and presented as a response to a chatbot or to a large language model. How's that? How do we think about that going forward?
Well, I think there are enormous challenges out there for IP professionals, Tony. Everybody's talking about AI adoption. For our audience, and this will be our sort of final thought as part of this podcast, but for our audience, what one piece of advice would you give them when considering AI adoption?
That's a good question. I'm going to throw that one back to you as well. So start thinking. For me, I would get the sequence of your thinking in the right order, right? So very often, and we've seen this for years with different tech cycles, okay? Very often a solution is presented and you think about how can I fit that into the way that I'm working? So the wrong way. And when it comes to AI, you need to think about your use cases. You need to think about your value. You need to think about what you're trying to achieve and then find a solution that delivers what you're trying to achieve. And I think the best way of doing that, and it's going to be no surprise to hear that, is to talk to a trusted partner who can help guide you through that. But the starting point is understanding what you're trying to achieve in the first instance, rather than how can I use this cool bit of kit. All right, so...
Tony, I'm going to give that there are pressure on corporate IP departments and IP law firms to adopt AI. And you know, whilst it's great that the IP industry is adopting AI and thinking about adopting AI, that's very apparent within our industry. Just to reiterate what you're saying, actually, Tony, you know, really think through the use case and the value that AI drives. And also conversely, think about where you do need that human in the loop, because you still do. You still do need the human in the loop cases.
Genuine intelligence is a lovely way to finish.
Absolutely. Absolutely. For those of you who are interested in our survey ahead of the game, it is available as part of this podcast. All it remains is for myself and Tony to bid you farewell. And for those of you who were wondering, Tony is definitely the elder statesman.
Oh, thank you for that, James. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for throwing me under the bus.
Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for everybody for joining. Take care. Bye-bye now.